Ramsey TV.
Ladies, if I were your husband, I would put you on a pedestal and adore you. And you might be uncomfortable with that at first, but you'd somehow have to get used to it. I would defer to you in all matters of the practical running of the household because you have much more wisdom than I do in that department. God has given me important work to do, and I would do it, and I know that you would lovingly support me. I would never forget your birthday. I would never forget our anniversary. No, not possible. Because these dates are important to me. And we would go out regularly to a nice restaurant, and I would listen to everything you had to say before I said anything. I would respect your life choices. I would respect the color of the drapes that you want in the living room, because that is your sovereign realm. In the bedroom, I would tip you over the brink of ecstasy 7 or 8 times before my ecstasy is even considered. Following that, I would lay you out on the bed, warm my hands with coconut oil, and massage your entire body. And believe me, you would love it. You will melt into the bed. This is just the way I operate. But now accepting applications. Having said all that, if you told me that you needed me to quit my job, I would not do it. If you told me that in some way I needed to compromise my principles, I would not do it. If you told me that if I loved you, I would go into debt for you and spend $250,000 so that you could have a house just like your sister's. Well, I'm sorry. I don't have the means for that. And so the answer would be no. Because I have my borders and you have your borders. And when we recognize these things, we will have a life of bliss. This is Martin Zender, and welcome to MZTV. And today is an important show about marriage. An important show about the roles of husbands and wives. A man's priority, according to Genesis, is his work. The work that God gave him to do. We see that in the first couple. God gave Adam a garden to tend. Must have been too much for him, because then God raised up, took out a woman from him to be his helper. That's what the scripture says. And they lived happily ever after, because this is a divine arrangement. A wife is not to tell her husband what he is to do for a living. She can make suggestions, and a good husband, which would be me, will listen to all these suggestions, but then make an executive decision. Since I'm such a wonderful husband, you're probably wondering, well, how did that 25-year marriage end? Do you really want to know? Because I wrote about it, and you can read about it down here in ZWTF 4.3. Yep. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I will draw your bath at night. Every night I will draw your bath. I will make sure it's the exact right temperature, and I will fold the towel and the washcloth and put it in a convenient place where you can reach it. If you had to go to work, I would pack your lunch and have it ready at the counter in the morning. You would never touch a doorknob for the rest of your life if I was your husband. I never let any woman touch a doorknob. I open doors for the opposite sex. Not only for my wife, but any of the fair sex. It's my thing. I love it. And if it were up to me, we'd go back to the days where men kiss women's hands in deference. When you greet a woman, You say, enchanted, I'm sure. That's the way I operate. I still do that today. I will kiss a woman's hand. I'm old school, and I have reverence for the female. So, if you really want to know what happened, not every detail, of course, but read ZWTF 4.3, and I'm going to be commenting on that today. I'm going to be reading portions from it today. And we're going to see examples of how Peter and his wife handled these things. Three different examples. This will be Zender Theater. This will be amusing. I'm pretty much guaranteeing it. Before I jump in, as if I haven't already, I'd like to point a video out to you made by Catherine Holmes. Catherine Holmes of Australia. This was the woman who sent me a care package. She sent me a big box, and in the box was a bunch of great cookies and chocolates. It was such a loving thing, and she sent me this hat. Sent me this hat, Australia, see that? The land down under. And her video is a testimony. I'm linking it down here along with my newsletter, ZWTF 4.13. Catherine's voice is so melodious, so calming. It's so sure, and it's such a great testimony of how the Lord showed her truth. So I can't wait for you to watch that. Go down there. When you're done with this, watch that. It'll bring you peace. It's so soothing, like I said. Very, very soothing. And thank you again for the hat, Catherine Holmes. God bless you. So, am I going to keep talking about Clyde? Yeah, until I'm done, until I said all I need to say, because there's been some damaging information coming out from that source that will wreck marriages if it's followed, eventually. Clyde and I had a blow up over this, but the truth doesn't change, and the way to ruin a marriage doesn't change either. So let's go. The scriptural text under consideration is Ephesians 5, verses 25 through 33. Let's quote the passage in its entirety. I'll show you what Clyde has done with it that's illicit and dangerous and damaging. And I will give you a principle of interpretation from A.E. Nock concerning analogies, concerning metaphors. And here the metaphor is Christ and husbands and wives and the ecclesia. That's the metaphor. And you're going to see how to treat a metaphor illicitly and to do illegal, terrible things with it in order to twist it to, once again, promote your beliefs, your pet doctrines, okay? Then we're going to see the right way to interpret it. And then we're going to see the example with Peter and Petra. Nobody knows what Peter's wife's name is. I named her Petra because I took literary license. That's what I do. Ephesians 5, 25 through 20 through 33. Husbands, be loving your wives, according as Christ loves the ecclesia and gives himself up for its sake, that he should be hallowing it, cleansing it in the bath of the water with his declaration, that he should be presenting to himself a glorious ecclesia, not having spot or wrinkle or any such things, but that it may be holy and flawless. Thus, the husbands also ought to be loving their own wives as their own bodies. He who is loving his wife is loving himself. For no one at any time hates his own flesh, but is nurturing and cherishing it. According as Christ also the ecclesia, for we are members of his body. For this, quote, a man shall be leaving his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. This secret is great. Yet I'm saying this as to Christ and as to the ecclesia. Moreover, you also, individually, each be loving his own wife, thus as himself, yet that the wife may be fearing the husband. Now I want you to note the phrase, and gives himself up, in verse 25. This is what Christ did for the ecclesia. According to Paul, husbands are to be loving their wives, according as Christ also loves the ecclesia and gives himself up for its sake. Okay. Now, years ago, Clyde wrote a series about this, saying that in Ephesians, it's a dramatically new kind of love that a husband is to offer his wife. This is no longer the old way Here's this artificial line again, raising its ugly head. It's no longer the old way, where a man takes care of his wife's needs, her emotional needs, her physical needs. No, no, this has now become a huge responsibility, transcending anything that's gone before. For now, ladies and gentlemen, a man must imitate Christ point for point in Ephesians 5 and give everything up to his wife. That's a misuse of an analogy, of a metaphor, and I'm going to show you how it is shortly. But the most disturbing installment of Clyde's series was to me the one titled The Scriptural Usage of Give. Here are some of the definitions of the word given by the author, Clyde, from various dictionaries and lexicons. It's not the definitions that disturbed me, but rather the loosely worded statements made by Clyde based on the definitions. Here's a sampling of the definitions forwarded for the word give. Who gives himself up? Christ gives himself up for the ecclesia. And Clyde concludes that therefore a man must give himself up in the same point-for-point way Christ gave himself up. Here's some scary definitions of the word give. Scary, that is, if you're a husband. To surrender, that is, yield up. To give or hand over to another. To give over into one's power or use. To deliver over or up to the power of someone. Give up, give over, give way. The author, Mr. Pilkington, then gives four examples from Scripture of this word in use. Matthew 4:12, cast into prison, giving up. Matthew 5:25, deliver to the judge, giving you up. Matthew 10:4, betrayed him, gives himself up. Acts 15:26, hazarded their lives, give up their souls. Okay, don't be confused by that. Clyde follows up with this comment. These words speak of These words speak of sacrifice and loss of liberty. Husbands are no longer their own. Like Christ, by choice, they have sacrificially, quote, given themselves up as an approach present to their wives. Now, I told you that you, my lady, as my wife, would be adored, revered, pedestalized. I mean, I would literally build you a pedestal. Call my wife, ask her about this. But that is not this. This is not even being your own person anymore. This is giving up your liberty. It says here, these words speak of sacrifice and loss of liberty. Husbands are no longer their own. Really? Then who are they? They are weak non-entities, seems to me, that give themselves up in totality. In an earlier installment of the same series, The Husband's Role in Love, my colleague writes concerning his conception of love, based on his interpretation of Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives. This is Clyde quoting, husbands, love your wives, Ephesians 5:25. Then he comments, unreserved love. His love for us was without limit, without condition, without reservation. He not merely gave, he gave himself. I'm disturbed, me, Martin Zenner, I'm disturbed by the phrase loss of liberty. I'm disturbed by the phrase husbands are no longer their own. And I'm really disturbed by the phrase without limit, without condition, and without reservation. I mean, that's major, yes, dear. That is major, yes, dear, territory. You're not making enough money. Yes, dear, I don't like your friends. Yes, dear, you need a different job. Yes, dear, you don't pay enough attention to me. Yes, dear, I'm tired of following your course for our life. Yes, dear, life needs to be easier for me. Yes, dear. Well, Now, I'm all for as many yes dears as is possible. I'm all for it. I love that. Except I'll say things like, yes, my darling. Yes, my princess. Yes, my queen. Yes, my goddess. That's just me. But that's one thing. This is an entirely different thing. Without reservation, without limit, without condition. When applying these loose interpretations to husbands loving their wives as themselves, with the implication, do this, the author of this article, I'll just say that, people are tired of me mentioning his name, I'm a little tired of it myself. The author seems to assume three things. One, that any of these things can be done, giving without limit. Two, that it should be done. And three, that husbands and wives love themselves first. Claudia's assuming that husbands and wives love themselves first, but that's not always the case. Points one and two are wrong. That is, we're not supposed to do this. This should not be done. And three is rarely the case, as I just said, that is loving oneself first. So the author, unwittingly, yet essentially, hands over a box of matches to children without so much of an explanation, without so much as a warning label, that is. The realm of consideration here, again, is marital love. Within that realm, the potential to misconstrue and misuse such loose, unscriptural phrases as without limit, without condition. I mean, the potential for disaster there is so great that I am forced to intervene before homes burn down because the children have been given matches that they don't know what to do with. I'm sorry if I'm being presumptuous. I just want to help people. Now, let me go to Mr. A.E. Knox's warning concerning overdoing it when it comes to analogies. This is what A.E. Knox says. Figures, especially those of likeness, which this is a figure of likeness. Paul is likening husbands to Christ and wives to the ecclesia. Figures, especially those of likeness, must be strictly limited to the point or points of contact. For it is axiomatic that there is unlikeness in all other particulars. In these long analogies, there's more unlikeness than there is likeness. And there's only one point of contact in any analogy. These analogies or metaphors must never be used as if they were true in fact. Christ, or husbands aren't Christ, wives aren't the ecclesia. There's nothing factual about Ephesians 5. It's not a fact at all. It's a metaphor. It's an analogy. And Paul's going to make one point. He's describing the career of Christ, everything Christ did. And when you misuse a metaphor, you take every single point and apply it to yourself. Every single point of Christ, Clyde is applying to husbands. Husbands are supposed to do everything, give themselves up. I mean, the logical conclusion of this is that husbands will literally be crucified for their wives. If that's the way we're going to interpret this metaphor, this extended metaphor of Ephesians 5, husbands will be crucified. That's the ultimate, right? If you follow it to its logical conclusion, give yourself up totally. I mean, Christ did that, yeah. He did that for the ecclesia. But in a way, he didn't, because this was what he wanted to do. This was his mission. This was his job. It's not like somebody told him to do it. Well, God, this was God's will for him. But he was manly throughout the entire trial, throughout the entire ordeal of the crucifixion. A.E. Knox then continues, therefore, it's unwise to use figures of speech as a basis of reasoning. For the points of contact are limited to those stated or apparent. And I'm going to show you the stated point of the whole passage in Ephesians 5. And they must not be extended to other relations, which is just what Clyde does. It's careless. He takes every single point of Christ and says, husbands, be like this, be like this, be like this. That's not the point at all. Thus, when Paul speaks, here's an example. This is from A.E. Knox. Thus, when Paul speaks of betrothing the Corinthians to Christ, he refers only to their singleness and purity. He compares the body of Christ to a virgin. Oh, does that mean that no members of the body of Christ are allowed to have sex or get married with anybody? They have to be virgins? See, that's how you misuse a metaphor. And that's exactly what the author has done with Ephesians 5. Misused the metaphor, taken every point, applied it to husbands. And wives don't have to do anything. Thus, when Paul speaks of betrothing the Corinthians to Christ, he refers only to their singleness and purity. The figure does not include any other aspect of betrothal or refer in any way to marriage. It doesn't refer in any way to marriage because the ecclesia is not a chaste virgin. It's not even a fact. It's a metaphor. Christ says, I am the door. That's not true. It's a metaphor. A metaphor is not literally true. And there's one point of contact. Oh, is Christ made out of wood? No. Does Christ have a hinge attached to his side? No. Does Christ squeak when he moves this way like a door? No. What's the aspect then? One aspect, and that is he's an entranceway to God. Simple. You don't apply any other thing from the door to Christ. And when you're reading Ephesians 5, you do not apply every single thing Christ does to a husband. But this is what Clyde has done. And when this stuff came out, husbands were writing me, saying, oh my God, I can't do this. Martin, I thought I was a good husband. But now I find out that I'm not giving everything. I'm not surrendering everything. I'm not throwing myself into the prison of my wife. I'm not giving every last drop of blood. That's another quote later from the author. Every last drop of blood. What? Who does this? Who does this? You don't give every last drop of blood to anything. How are you going to help anybody if you give every last drop of blood? I know it's a metaphor, but still. It's like the example on the airplane. The flight attendant comes on, tells you if there's a drop in pressure, oxygen masks will come down, and put your mask on before assisting a child. What? That's selfish. Help yourself before you help a child? Well, yeah, because if you can't breathe, you'll pass out, and you're not going to be any help to anybody when you're passed out, are you? You must have boundaries in your life, and you must not let people cross your boundaries. Otherwise, you become what is known as a codependent, where you're just a doormat. And your opinion of yourself, since you have no source of love within yourself, as I said, not many people love themselves, the source of your happiness becomes other people. You feed off of other people's acceptance of you if you're codependent. And this is a problem here with not just wives, but husbands. Anybody can be this way. I'm talking about giving up your borders. So you will do anything. You will be a yes man or a yes woman. You'll do anything for anybody. You'll bleed yourself. You'll run out of oxygen, hoping to please everybody so that they'll like you, so that your empty love tank will be filled. This is unhealthy. Everybody needs borders. A husband needs borders. He is not responsible to do everything his wife wants. A wife has borders. She's not responsible to do everything her husband says. If it goes against her principles or her spiritual beliefs, it is true that in a conflict, in an impasse within a marriage, the wife is to give way because the husband is the head. It doesn't mean the wife is inferior. Not at all. When you encounter a yield sign on the highway, does the yield sign letting one road go through as priority over another lane, does that make any comment as to the character of the people in the certain lane? No. The people who have to yield are no less people than the people who get the go-ahead. But there's got to be a rule where there's an impasse. And in a marriage, a spiritual marriage, the rule is the husband listens to his wife, the wife contributes, they all talk about it, they have a disagreement, the wife gives way. I'm sorry, that's just how it is. And if the husband's smart, he'll then give her a beautiful massage that night, put her on the bed, warm his hands with oil, get a candle, put on some soft music, and just work. I'm not talking about the little baby massage for 5 minutes. I'm talking about the Zender way. An hour, luxuriating. Then I turn you over and do the other side. Ah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So you give way every chance you get. But when it comes to important things, you do not give way. You do not surrender completely. You do not put yourself in jail. You're not no longer your own person. It's just sick. It's dangerous. It's wrong advice. It's terrible advice. And any man that does it I'm sorry to say this, but there are some women who would take advantage of that. There are some women who would, not everybody, and it works the other way. It works the other way. I'm just using this example because Clyde uses this example. Sometimes giving a person everything they want is like giving alcohol to an alcoholic. If somebody is jealous in a relationship, for instance, and they're telling their partner who they can be with, who they can see, who they're allowed to talk to, who they're not allowed to talk to. If the partner acquiesces to every demand of the pathologically jealous person, it's like feeding a beast. That person's never going to be satisfied. You have to stop. You have to stop it. You have to say, look, I'm an adult. I've had friends for years. You are not going to tell me who my friends can be. Okay? I'm not a child. I've lived for this many years. I've somehow made it. So, no. You think you're doing them a favor by acquiescing. This is what this teaching, this strange teaching, encourages. Acquiescing constantly. Whatever you say, whatever you say, I give myself into your power. But see, Christ didn't even do that. If somebody had said, hey, walk away from the cross, he wouldn't have done it. He was on a course. He was on a path. It's just so illicit to take every aspect of Christ and say, husbands, this is you, this is you, this is you, this is you, this is you. It violates the rules of interpretation of a metaphor. Let's go on with A. Enoch here. The figure does not include any other aspect of betrothal, referring to Paul, referring to the Ecclesia as a chaste virgin. It does not refer to any other aspect of betrothal or refer in any way to marriage. It is confusing to connect it with such figures. The point to press in figures of likeness is that they depend on unlikeness. They depend on unlikeness. Two objects must be unlike in the main and similar in one or more particulars in order to be a figure. Under no circumstances must the likenesses be allowed to go beyond these particulars. This is exactly what the author has done. Exactly. And men were writing me at the time, oh my God, I can't do this. You're not supposed to do it. You're not freaking supposed to do it. I mean, not only if you do this, if you try to be exactly like Christ in every aspect, you'll eventually get crucified for your wife. That'd be the ultimate accomplishment. Yay! I got crucified for my wife. I'm really like Christ. Oh, I gave myself up in totality. She wanted me to be crucified, and I had no other choice because I'm to give, 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 give. I'm not my own person anymore. So I mounted the cross, she nailed me on there, and it was the ultimate sacrifice. It was fantastic. What are you, nuts? Are you nuts? I don't think you are. And I don't think you're going to do this crap. And I don't want you to hear things like this. Because this is still persistent. You see, it's not just something in the past. It's coming up again. And I tell you, it's potential for ruin. It'll ruin husbands and wives. Because the husbands are doing something misguided, and the wives are just, some of them, getting fed. Maybe they're empty. I've met a lot of women with empty love tanks. I don't know why. It shocks me, the number of women who have been abused. Absolutely shocks me. I was so naive going into marriage. And just so naive. I was raised in a wonderful household. Never even heard of such a thing. Of an empty love tank. Of a woman who's been abused by a relative. Sexually abused. Horrible. Just an epidemic in this country. I hate it. And so their love tank is empty. And so a lot of these women are not only looking for a husband, they're looking for a father and a God. And they're expecting their husband to be a father and a God as well as a husband. And this teaching of Clyde Pilkington encourages that. Yes, I'll be your husband and your father and your God and your Christ. And if you want to put me on a cross, you can, because I'll do anything for you. Because I don't have any borders. It's all up to you. You dictate to me. Because I'm Christ and I give everything up. I'm not even my own person. That's what the man said. No longer your own person. So also in parables, the salient points alone are to be pressed. For much detail may be included, which merely makes the picture complete. Yeah, there are many details included in Ephesians 5, which merely make the picture complete. Now I'm going to tell you the pertinent point. I'm going to tell you the salient point. I'm going to tell you what Paul is telling us. Clyde disagrees with me vehemently, vehemently. He's spoken against it. But he doesn't use my name because he's not me. He's probably less wanting to appear offensive than me, probably. He says, someone's out there teaching that Ephesians 5 is just a repetition of loving your associate as yourself, using Christ as a as the latest example. And that's exactly what this is. There's nothing new in Ephesians 5. Nothing new in Ephesians 5. I don't think there's anything new in Ephesians 5. It's a rehash of what God has already been doing through Christ, through Paul, with the Ecclesia starting in Acts chapter 13. Nothing new. And so Christ is just the latest example of love. It all goes back to the law, really. Love your associate as yourself. It appeared in the law. Jesus repeats it, and Paul repeats it. Love your associate as yourself. So Paul says again, we're going back to verse 25, Ephesians 5, husbands, be loving your wives according as Christ also loves the ecclesia and gives himself up for its sake, that he should be hallowing it, cleansing it, presenting himself spotless ecclesia. It's Christ that gave himself up for the ecclesia. Okay, so here we go. Thus, Paul said, thus, after talking about Christ, hallowing and cleansing, are you supposed to hallow and cleanse your wife in the bath of the water? That is, are you supposed to be the one that makes your wife holy? That's what Christ did. He made it not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. Are you supposed to do that to your wife, make her perfect without spot or wrinkle? No, that's what Christ did. That's not the part of analogy husbands, that's not the part of this analogy husbands are supposed to do. That it may be holy and flawless? Is that your job? Thus, Paul says, the husbands also ought to be loving their own wives as their own bodies. There it is, the simple truth. Love your wife as your own body. He who is loving his own wife is loving himself. For no one at any time hates his own flesh, but is nurturing and cherishing it, according as Christ also the ecclesia. Christ nourished and cherished the ecclesia. Here's the point. Christ could have destroyed the ecclesia. He was much stronger than the ecclesia. But instead of destroying it because we're all sinners, no one is righteous, no, not one, Christ, being the stronger one, could have demolished the ecclesia. He could have destroyed it. Just like God said to Moses on Mount Sinai, get away, these people are sinning, they're dancing around the golden calf. I'll stand by, step aside, Moses, go find some cover. I'm going to destroy these people. God could do it. But of course, God was just testing Moses. Moses says, no, don't do it for your own namesake. So instead of destroying the ecclesia, because he's stronger, Christ nourished the ecclesia. There it is. Thus, the husbands also ought to be loving their own wives as their own bodies. Is that hard? Do you smack yourself in the face? No. Then don't smack your wife in the face. Do you starve yourself? No. Then don't starve your wife. Do you love yourself? Do you pamper your flesh? Then pamper your wife's flesh and her emotions as well. You try to take care of your emotional needs. That's how you love yourself. Then you have to take care of your wife's emotional needs. That's all this verse is saying. Christ is the latest example of love. God, Paul is presenting Christ as the latest example of how to love your wife. Don't beat her up. You see, husbands abusing wives, physical abuse, is as old as man itself. Because men are stronger, and they get pissed off. And people tell me that wives sometimes do things to piss off their husbands. I don't know. I'm just reporting what I've heard from other people. So, it's a bad mix, because the man is stronger. It's the only advantage, in my opinion, it's the only advantage men have over women. I consider women to be the superior gender. You know that if you've read any of my books, Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction or Eve Raised. You know how I feel about that. So, husbands have a responsibility to cherish their wives. And the greatest example is Christ, who, though he was the Son of God, gave himself up for the ecclesia. That shows what he did instead of destroying it. It doesn't mean that, okay, we're now supposed to give ourselves up in every aspect of Christ did to our wives. No, no. Remember what A. Enoch wrote. You don't over-apply a metaphor. It's one point of contact. Everything else is not like the other thing. Not like it at all. We're just filling in the extra information. We're talking about Christ, what he did. You're not supposed to follow what he did. Otherwise, again, you crucify yourself. Or you let your wife crucify you. Oh, great success. Great success. You out of your mind. No, you can't do that. I think it hurts. It hurts. And it's illegal in all 50 states and part of Mexico and Canada. Crucifixion is. So, don't do that. So there it is. I got much more to say on this, but I need to get to Peter and Petra to see how a husband and wife are supposed to behave, employing their own gift that God gave them. And now, the MZTV Players presents a three-part play, Peter and Petra. Scenario one, worst case. Peter gives every last drop of blood and energy to his wife. Well, we've got a big meeting in the upper room in 15 minutes. I'll be seeing you.
You'll be seeing me? What about the garage door you promised to fix?
What? Oh, I'll fix it later, Petra. I've really got to be at this meeting.
Do you still love me?
Huh?
I don't think you love me anymore.
Of course I do. Can we talk about this later?
If you loved me, you'd fix the garage door.
Baby, I'll fix it tomorrow. I really gotta go.
What could be more important than my needs?
Something big is gonna happen in the upper room.
What could be bigger than loving your wife?
Oh, I don't know, an historic descent of the Holy Spirit?
I think you love your work more than you love me.
You're a very close second.
Peter!
Wait, listen, is that a wind blowing?
Stop looking out the window, Peter. I'm over here.
Yeah, but I think God is over there.
I've had enough of this. Your first line of ministry is me.
Do you have a verse for that?
You have a choice to make, mister. It's either me or the upper room.
Is this a joke?
Hardly. I'm your primary responsibility. The upper room thing is an addition.
Well, actually, you're the addition, but...
Nice try, Rock. Are you a godly husband or aren't you?
There's a glow coming from the upper room.
Are you a true type of Christ or aren't you?
Oh no! Andrew's in the city square reading the Gettysburg Address. Idiot!
Great, now let's have that sweat and energy over here, shall we?
Okay, forget it. It's over. It's lost. Where's the screwdriver?
That's better. You're doing the right thing, and Jesus will reward you for it.
Scenario 2. Better case. Peter recognizes his first line of ministry, in spite of Petra.
Well, we've got a big meeting in the upper room in 15 minutes. I'll be seeing you.
You'll be seeing me? What about the garage door you promised to fix?
What? Oh, I'll fix it later, Petra. Gotta go.
I'm gonna divorce you.
You'll be missed.
Scenario 3. Best case. Petra recognizes her husband's priorities and serves them and him.
Rock, have you looked at the time?
Oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be at the upper room in 15 minutes.
I've got your lunch packed at the door. Now get.
Oh, crap. I promised to fix the garage door today.
Are you out of your mind? You can fix it tomorrow or the day after. Who cares?
I love you, baby.
Yeah. Oh, here. Don't forget your scriptures, for Christ's sake.
Where would I be without you?
In Hades. Now get the hell out of here, or Andrew's gonna do something stupid.